Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Scott Kowalty has been writing a local column in Cedar Falls, Waterloo for more than 40 years. He first wrote for the Cedar Falls Record and then later for the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier. And just about a week ago, he published his last column. Scott Kowalty is a writer and a musician and an emeritus professor at the University of Northern Iowa, and he is with me now. Hello, Scott.
Hello, Charity. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thanks for asking me. I'm sorry that I had to be noticed in this way, that I'm quitting.
Well, we've noticed you a few times over the years, Scott, but let's go back just a few decades. How did these columns first start?
Well, you know, I was just finishing my doctoral dissertation on Norman Mailer, and the writing was so dreadful, and I admired Donald Call so much, I thought, I wonder if I can write more like Call and less like critic of Norman Mailer. And I sat down and actually wrote three pieces right in a row, a la Call, and took them down to Dave Westfall at the Cedar Falls Record. And he said, yeah, we can publish these. We can't give you much money, but we can put them in the paper and see what happens. And he did. And by golly, people liked them, sort of. I mean, enough to keep me going a while. And
so when you say when you say they were a la Call, I mean, Donald Call, of course, we remember for writing about politics all those years. Was that your idea, that you would be a political columnist?
Well, actually, human politics. I wanted to make people laugh because I found things kind of funny most of the time, and so did Call. But it was with a sardonic, satirical outlook, and I had the very same outlook, sort of. I mean, eventually I went other directions, but that was the opening of it. I wanted to make satirical comments about anything that came to mind. And I enjoyed it. I actually thought it was great fun.
So when you were writing a weekly column, you had experience already as a writer and a writer that, you know, you've written many things over the years. But writing a weekly column, it takes a special kind of discipline and a special kind of thought process to be able to produce that on a weekly basis. Can you tell me about that process, what you learned about it?
Well, sure. You know, the fact is, you're writing all the time. You never stop writing. An idea comes up, say the deadline is 6 days off. You think, okay, in 6 days I've got to have something. And things just sort of evolve until the night or two before you start sketching it out, a few paragraphs, you know, and mashing around with it. And after about 4 hours before the column is due, after a day or so, it all falls into place. And I just developed a rhythm like that, thinking about it, writing about it. And by the time it was due, it was pretty well done. I made a few final changes, but it took a lot of revisions. I mean, I write as a reviser more than as a writer. So what you were reading was probably the 12th or 15th version of the first original drafts.
You started out trying to emulate Donald Call. Do you remember a moment when you felt like you found your own voice?
Well, you know, he stopped writing for the Register, and I stopped reading him. I didn't find him anywhere. So I just kind of went off on my own. I suppose I worked more like Mark Twain, not that I'm anywhere near as good as Mark Twain, but I felt like the kind of deeper commentary on the issues of the day was called for. So I tried to go a little deeper, although you're always limited to 500 to 700 words. Sometimes on my website I wrote much longer pieces, but it's hard to tell if anybody's reading those. And I think my best shot was always a kind of 500 to 700 word commentary, but as deep as I could go in that short time, short space, I should say.
Well, and that is a really limited amount of space to write.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how is there a special kind of, I don't know, idea that you can approach in that way? Did you throw out some ideas because you just couldn't tackle them in 700 words?
Well, I used to have a major point, a serious major point. I mean, a central major point that I focused on. And I tried to be as succinct as possible. I always found my first drafts were like 1,000 words. It was very easy to cut 200 or 300. And I found it was very easy to cut a couple hundred more. So finally, I got it down to 400 words, 500 words, and it was a matter of being really succinct. And when I got them succinct, I think they read better. They had more rhythm to them. Whenever I read columnists now, I think, you know, you could have cut a couple hundred words up there. because often the columns just go on and on, they blather, and they repeat themselves, and I really try to get away from that.
So once you started honing your skill as a columnist, did that change how you wrote and even how you taught in the other parts of your life?
You know, it really did. For a while, I did commentary. I actually did several commentaries on NPR. Well, I did movie reviews on NPR and reading them on KUNI and then having them nationally out there was a whole different thing. When you read something aloud, you really realize how repetitious you can be, how awkward some sentences are. And I think reading aloud is the single best thing I did for my writing. And I try to do it all the time. No, I just sit and mumble to myself when I'm writing, because the sentences have to have a rhythm, and the rhythm is really clear when you do it orally.
Looking at your collection of columns over more than four decades, I mean, you covered a lot of ground, obviously.
I did.
Some of the pieces that you are most fond of are biographical sketches of individuals, both living and also sometimes when people passed away. Tell me what's special about those to you.
Well, I've known a lot of interesting people over the years, and when it came time to write a column, I thought, why don't I just write about these interesting people? Nobody ever seemed to tell me not to. In fact, nobody ever told me not to write about anything, so I was lucky that way. I had no special area that I had to focus on. So I took these interesting people and turned them into subjects for a column. And I think looking back over my collection of 1,000 columns now, that's all they let me print on that website. I really like the ones on various personalities the best. I think Charles Matheson was my favorite.
Tell us a little bit about Charles Matheson.
Yeah, he was an amazing man. I met him when I was just a freshman in college, and he was my vocal teacher for 4 years. And tremendously enthusiastic about everything, especially about music. And he transferred his enthusiasm for music to everyone, including all of his students and including me. And I've never lost one. I could no longer teach music because I couldn't stand to rehearse. But I really prefer to read instead of rehearse. But I got away from music as a profession, but I still did a lot with music. And it was all kind of due to Charles Matheson's enthusiasm, which I think I captured in that column on Charles Matheson. I still think that's probably my overall single favorite column, actually. And then I wrote on Waller, you know, my old friend Waller, about Bridges, Madison County Waller, and then a lot of the politicians around him, John Cruz and Quentin Hart and so forth. All those pieces came out reasonably well, I thought, because I got to know them fairly well in my interviews. And rereading those, I thought they were pretty well done, frankly, humbly.
Well, when you look at a column, like you wrote a column, a remembrance of your dear friend Robert James Waller. In sitting down and writing about someone that you shared so many experiences with and that was so important to you, how do you think that process helps you understand this person in a different way?
Well, you know, my whole life I've had to think about what are the high points? What are the high points of the day? What are the high points of the week? What are the high points of this conversation? And whenever anyone talks to you, I say to myself, now, what are the high points? What are you getting at? And looking back over a long relationship that I had with Waller, I looked at the high points. What were the really important areas that we covered? And I just focused on those. And it came down to 5 or 6 really critical pieces of information that I could distill into a kind of biographical sketch. And that's really how I learned to think about not just writing, but everything. What are the high points today? And that has sort of kept me going over the years in terms of writing and thinking, actually.
Now, you took on some pretty controversial issues in the Cedar Valley area. When you decided to write something where you knew your opinion might be fairly unpopular, how did you approach that?
Well, there was one particular one that was extremely controversial, way more controversial than I thought it would be, actually. But I didn't originate it. There were 4 people who came to me who worked at the lab school or had worked at the lab school.
And for people who aren't familiar with the lab school in Cedar Falls, this was a laboratory school that was connected to the University of Northern Iowa. So faculty from the education department at the university would teach there and kind of design the curriculum and mentor students. And it was elementary through high school.
Yes, and there was a tremendous attachment to the lab school around the area because it was really an innovative form of innovative teaching. And I actually student taught there in 1960 to 61. I was a music teacher there as a student. And so I loved the place. I thought it was wonderful. And everybody loved the place. But as the years went on, it grew less and less relevant, much more expensive, and so forth. So these people really did call me and say, you know, we think the lab school should be closed. And I was actually kind of shocked. But they told me the whole story and their complaints. And really all I did in that poem was summarize their complaints. I did it in kind of a forceful way. But I still thought they were right. I mean, once they convinced me that they had a point,
I made that point. Went into those conversations on the other side? You thought that the lab school should continue?
I was just interested. I was neutral, but a little bit leaning toward it because I actually liked my experience down there a lot. But when they talked about what it had become by then, this was in the 90s, I realized they were right. And so I wrote a column that really talks about that. And God, the letters and the vitriol and the anger. I realized that Koob actually said, President Koob, who tried to close it before Allen actually did close it, said he got death threats.
Wow.
From people who led the lab school and didn't want him to close it. I thought, my God, it's such emotional, such an emotional attachment people had to that school. And I didn't really know that. I didn't realize how powerful it was.
So what do you think?
So that was a surprise. Actually.
Right. What did you learn from that?
Be careful what you say in public. But I wouldn't.
I mean, did you regret saying what you said?
No. No, not at all. The people that I wrote it, actually, I ran it by them. I said, what do you think about this? Oh, that's great. That's just what we would say. So they approved it, and then I made a few changes and put it in just pretty much the way they approved it, and they loved it. They thought it was exactly what needed to be said. So I never felt any regrets. I just thought I was just surprised that there's so much anger. And the level of anger was way over the top, I thought, that anybody would actually want to be close that below the lab school.
Did you receive death threats for your column?
You know, I never received any death threats at all. I received dislike letters and angry letters, but no hate mail. Once in a while, there'd be an odd one when somebody was really crazy. But just Ron Roberts used to call it, I get dislike mail. You never get hate mail in Iowa. You get dislike mail. They disliked my columns, and of course, they thought they disliked me, even though they had no idea who I was. So it was just over the years, I got quite a bit of some angry dislike mail, but not too much. Most of it was fan mail. The people appreciated it, were elaborated on what I said. And I made some friends and lunch mates. And over the years, I think the column had way more positives than negatives when all was said and done.
Tell me a little bit about Cedar Falls. I mean, it's where I grew up, so I have a pretty good handle on it. But, you know, you're talking to a statewide audience, people who aren't that familiar with the community. How would you characterize the community?
Well, it's called a lawn city. It's a really nice town in so many ways because it's so compact. You never have to stand in line. There are never any traffic jams. There's always a sense of community here. It's a wonderful place to grow up. I think it's also a wonderful place to be from. You have to go away for a while and then come back to really appreciate it, which I did and have. I think it's just one of those cities that people get attached to. I can't tell you the number of people that wanted to come back and live here. And actually, after years away, they come back and live. They think it's just a remarkable city, and they remember it fondly. And it's one of those cities that has a river running through it, so it floods every now and then. There's a little drama downtown. It has an amazing downtown area. It has a few volunteers that keep the city going with Sturgis Falls Days and my recent Cedar Falls Writers Festival, and on and on and on. It's one of those cities you can't help but be proud of, actually.
Does having a column, being a voice for the community for so many years, do you think that changes your relationship with the city, with the town that you live in?
Well, you know, I had a really mixed relationship because there are enough angry people so that they just avoid me. Sometimes they said bad things to me when I saw them in public. But I wasn't actually a Chamber of Commerce voice. I was a critical voice. And so they didn't quite trust me to say great things about the city all the time. when I wrote my Lunch with a Leader pieces, I interviewed 12 leaders, including John Cruise and the mayors. I had a lot of pride, but I also recognized they had their problems, and the cities have their problems. And I often touched on those lightly, I hope. But I'm not just a promoter, I was also a critic, and I think the criticism helps, actually.
Why did you decide to end your column right now?
Well, you know, Charity, when I started, I was 34 years old with a much brighter brain, a larger brain, and as I've gotten older, I'm 74 now. My brain has shrunk. I recognize that. I don't think as well as I used to. I read my old column and think, boy, that's really good. I don't think I could do that anymore. So I'm frankly just getting to the point where I'm not sure I can do the job I want to do, and I want to quit while I still can. I'm still writing pieces. I don't know when I'm going to submit them. So it isn't so much, it's a matter of losing some power, some writing power because of my age, frankly. And then I realize I'm starting to repeat myself. And the hardest thing of all to admit is that I'm just preaching to the choir. I'm saying the same things to the same people over and over again.
Tell me why you think that. Why, do you think that something has changed in our culture that means that people wouldn't read something that they disagree with anymore?
Well, absolutely. I think I've lost friends. High school friends don't speak to me anymore because of all the stuff I've written about, political stuff. Very critical of the current regime, King Trump, I call him, and so forth. It's just a terrible time to be controversial because people just ignore it. So I was feeling pretty ignored. The only responses I get anymore from the Courier that I was getting was positive. They were positive. The negative ones just didn't bother because they weren't reading. And I think in general that's true of columnists all across the spectrum, that you find your columnists you like and you don't read anybody else. And so I think readers dropped me because I thought I was too left-wing for them. When in fact, I really try to be more balanced. I try to write more in the middle, but they wouldn't see that, I don't think. So, and then I was repeating myself. I looked back at some older columns and think, well, that's better than what I could do now. So not only am I writing, preaching to the choir, I'm preaching the same things to the choir, not as well as I used to.
Well, do you think you can turn off that columnist part of your brain? I mean, it's only been about a week.
Yeah. Well, they've gone to it once every 3 weeks now, with Gary Kroger back on the left side of the page and Fred Abraham. And so it was really only writing once every 3 weeks. That wasn't a burden at all. I have a website, CedarValleyChronicles.com.
All right.
I write for that quite a bit, and I'm going to continue writing for that. And once in a while, I'll see if Nancy Newhoff at the Courier wants to publish a piece, and if she does, I'll submit it.
All right. Scott Kowalke, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Well, thanks so much, Jerry. Appreciate it.
Scott Kowalke wrote a column for the Cedar Valley area for more than 40 years, and he's decided to retire his column. This is Talk of Iowa.